Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I'm George Taylor with you today for podcast number 84 for our veterans. This Friday, November 11th, is Veterans Day. I want to take this time to celebrate veterans and our country. I am a veteran as well. I was a Cold Warrior, sitting in a missile control center waiting for the word to send nuclear-armed ICBMs to targets deemed to be hostile to the United States. I tell people my job was to destroy the world, but I failed. Thankfully, right? That's just one of the jobs that a member of the armed forces might tackle. There are any number of others that are just as important, but could not be done without the effort of a member of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, or Coast Guard. And there are those members of society who serve in the reserves, taking time from jobs and family to stay prepared and protect this great country if and when the need arises. Thank you to you all. When I was a member of the armed forces, it was almost a rite of passage for any young man to spend time serving in the military. In this day and age, it's not as prevalent an experience. I see fewer and fewer members of the military represented in gatherings that I attend, whether it be church or a public concert where military is honored. So today, I want to spend some time saluting those of you who currently serve in the military. Thank you. As well as to any veterans out there, thank you for your service. And my salute today starts with a musical salute. Let's take a listen to the Armed Forces medley.
Thank you.
That's the Armed Forces Medley. You heard a sample of every one of the service's theme songs in that nice arrangement. Regina Puckett is one of the authors for whom I've produced a number of books, and among them is a poetry collection entitled Here Among the Ruins. In this collection is a Veterans Day prayer. During this day of quiet remembrance of our country's freedom and independence, we are grateful for our soldiers' brave gallantry in a world filled with hopelessness and apathy. We take this moment to stop and ponder on the privileges so many people squander. In this hushed moment, we take the time to reflect on all our brave warriors we hold in such respect. Sending up a prayer for these great women and men, we beseech you to please keep them safe. Amen. That's a Veterans Day prayer by Regina Puckett. You can find it in her collection of poems entitled Here Among the Ruins. It's on my website in audio and Amazon.com in printed version. Finally, I've just been contracted to produce a book entitled Undeserved Favor. This is by an author whose pseudonym is John Yell. The real John Yell is the author's uncle, who is a veteran in World War II. Sergeant Yell's story is told by his son Rick in the foreword and dedication of this book, and I think it's appropriate to tell that story. Here's what Rick writes. John Yell enlisted February 18, 1943, and was honorably discharged October 18, 1945. He was a technical sergeant, top gunner in the 463rd Bomb Group, 774th Bomb Squad, 5th Bombardment Wing, H-15 U.S. Army Air Force, flying out of Salone Army Base, Foggia No. 1, near Foggia, Italy. Dad's B-17 aircraft was shot down on July 15, 1944, on a bombing run over Ploiești, Romania. I remember him telling how they were hit by shrapnel, but sure all members of the crew were able to get out of the plane. He landed in a small valley and immediately after getting out of his parachute, reached for his pistol. He said he had no more than put his hand on the handle when hearing German soldiers on the hill telling them not to move with rifles pointed at them. He had no chance of escape. He was taken to Stalag 4 near Grostikov, Pomerania, now Tykovo, Poland. He remained there until February 6, 1945, when artillery shells were heard from the approaching Russians. They moved the wounded soldiers and those not capable of marching by rail car to an unknown location. The rest of the soldiers, 9 to 10,000 of them, were then marched to the west. The men were told that they would only be marching 3 to 4 days, so many of the men started the march carrying many of their personal items along with the little food they might have had from Red Cross packages. They quickly realized that they could not carry the additional weight, so they ended up discarding many items along the way. They broke up prisoners into 4 or 5 marching groups, marching during the day, and when lucky, would spend the night in barns along the way. Often there were so many men in the barn they slept standing. Food was extremely poor, if available at all. Dad said most of the meals consisted of a watery soup that had a little bit of potato or carrot in it. Most of the time they had to fend for themselves. Dad told me they would eat anything they could get their hands on, including rats. Dad said they formed concubines or groups of 3 to 4 prisoners. They held each other up while marching, because if you fell, you were likely to be shot. Marching through small towns was particularly difficult, as Nazi youth would kick them and try tripping them to watch as the guards shot the prisoners. Disease was rampant, with dysentery the biggest problem. Men would help by picking lice off the other. The march lasted 86 days and covered a total of 600 miles. Approximately 1,300 men lost their lives on this march. Dad weighed 80 pounds when freed by Russian troops. It was amazing to me he was able to keep it together as well as he did. No man should see or be treated that way. Regretfully, most know little to nothing about the German death march. On a side note, I was babysitting Mom and Dad's house about 20 years ago when the phone rang. The caller asked if I was John. I told him he was my dad. The man asked if he was still alive. When I told him yes, he was, but was on vacation, the guy just started crying. It must have taken 5 minutes to get himself together. Turns out he was the navigator on Dad's plane on the day they were downed. He had a bad sinus infection and couldn't fly. They told him that the whole crew was killed. He was looking through a POW magazine and saw Dad's name. I called Dad, and they were able to stop in Tennessee on their way back from Florida and visit him. He died 5 months after Mom and Dad's visit. By the way, P.S., we have 2 telegrams that were sent to my grandma telling her that he was a POW and another telling her of his liberation. The story told by Rick of his father, John Yell, a World War II veteran. Thank you, Sergeant Yell, for your service. Here's a prologue from this book, Undeserved Favor. 17th Parallel, July 3rd, 1969. It occurred to me, like bolts of lightning, that it's destiny to be standing in this unique location at precisely the right time and precisely the right place. Puzzling and debating if I might be a budding genius, having figured it out without help, my innate ability to reason or dream seems convincing beyond a shadow of a doubt. Could it be this muddy hole that I wisely dug a little deeper last night to protect my 6'4 frame, despite pelting rain, was divine premonition? Or is this the way it's supposed to be in a cosmic sense, a random sequence without intelligent design or scientific explanation? Or is it where my creator intends me to be at this moment? I would have picked another spot, given the chance, especially today. But when it comes to knowing truth, why am I here? I didn't ask to be in this scary environment where human value ranks lower than bugs. Other factors might include low draft number and political forces beyond my pay grade, though others could have been chosen instead of me. While a product of well-to-do parents wanting to pull deferment strings, why chastise me for enlisting? Face it, I'm simply a hired hand. A useful idiot, a grunt along for the tumultuous ride. More than likely, Job and Paul felt about the same during their numerous and often brutal trials of life and death, sacrifice, trust, and belief. Incoming! A wild-eyed neighbor, maybe 3 to 4 years younger, on my left, yells at the top of his lungs, a shrill, terrifying screech that I pray awakens the dead. Looking at the youthful, frightened, half-shaven face, then behind me, down a steep embankment in a neat row of black, heavy-duty, rubberized bags, my prayer hadn't been answered. Consequently, focus turns to the rain, despite one of several 120-millimeter mortar rounds landing close enough to cause hair to stand on end while ripping apart concertina barbed wire protection. Will you stop it, Lord? Enough rain already. There must be somewhere on earth that needs it more. I'm sorry for complaining about the weather. At least it's not about the large body of North Vietnam regulars, NVA, about to launch their 3rd counterattack on this late, hot, and humid afternoon. I can deal with them, thanks to your command in the Book of Joshua. Staring at the bottom of the foxhole, I can see the dirty water is above the wood pallet I lifted from a defunct mess hall tent, suffering a direct hit on another eventful day. Wondering if I should again use the steel pot in one helmet, bailing out the muddy slosh. That tiring and depressing image is interrupted by a brass bugle blaring several hundred yards behind an extended tree line. Based on numerous samples, that particular tune grabs my attention, effectively blocking notions of scooping water or other time-consuming distractions. I'd grown to appreciate that ominous warning instead of griping about it, typical of cherries, rookies, along the narrow ridge line of our forward firebase, noting curious stares from a Bayou Cajun on my right, while the bugle rallies enemy troops. He asks, "Are you worried, Sergeant?" Jacques Lafleur wonders aloud, his accent one that takes a little while zeroing in. "Of course I'm worried," I finally reply after delayed translation. "This rain could wash away protective coverings of mud and sandbags, not to mention risk of trench foot." "I mean the commie dinks," he chides aggressively. "What's wrong with you, dude?" "Good question, my southern mud soldier. I often debate myself about that. I figured if the good Lord wants me around a while longer, then why should both of us worry about it? He's got it covered. Either way, the cookie crumbles." Shaking his head at me as if I'm dinky dough, crazy, from pressure to perform, the inexperienced corporal complains a little more aggressively. "You've been in the boonies too long, man. R&R and boom boom is what you need now." "You think so? I'd promote you on the spot if it were up to me." "That's a brilliant, though useless, deduction, as we're about to be attacked by an enemy noted for suicide attacks with blatant disregard for life. I wonder why you're not already an officer." Shaking his head and signaling with a nasty gesture that I'm off the reservation, I decide to ignore the unkind signal and get back to more pressing duties. Moments later, I flip the M16 assault rifle from safe to semi and begin reducing numbers of old and young, sandal-clad fanatics, hoping to confiscate my alluvial abode. Finally, repelling the third human wave after a significant give-and-take slugfest, some action hand-to-hand, where last gasps are inches away, a booming cheer across our thinned line suggests we're alive for the moment. As the battle winds down with 5.56mm rounds ripping at enemy heels, I note empty foxholes on both sides and wonder if the occupants hightailed or simply vanished. When noise and cordite stench dwindle, two mangled bootless bodies are dragged down the hill before being tagged, bagged, and added to a lengthening row awaiting extract. I take the sobering scene as a vivid reminder of where I am and why I'm here. Though I'd seen that frightful sight many times during previous tours of duty, it remains a serious image playing on one's mind when pondering ramifications of coming back to the world inside a container. After finally bailing brown flood plain water for 20 minutes, I'm feeling better about my situation, until an officer with a disgusting clean uniform and decent manners slides up to my forward position and said I should join him and a few others at the bottom of the hill. The darkness is fast approaching. I'm about to follow when he looks back and advises that I bring an extra canteen and ammo. With an indifferent nod about dire implications of that qualifying amendment, I check the sorry expression of a shell-shock fighter nearby and nod. "Pays the same, Corporal. You made it through another day, and that's a good thing. Keep your head down and my spider hole open. I'll be back." While a dozen enlisted and NCO veterans in the A-team, including my best friend in the unit, listen to an Army colonel's perilous plan, it occurs to me this mission might not be part of God's plan tonight. Did he know about this change in tactics? Is it approved by the Almighty God? Or was it some low-level two-star general inside an air-conditioned mobile home moving color pens on a battlefield map miles from the action? "Father, let this cup pass if it be your will." "All right," the colonel recaps after we reluctantly swallow what's being demanded of us. "The job is simple," the West Point graduate assures. "Instead of waiting for the next wave, we're going to surprise these little devils while they regroup. Tonight, you're going to proceed near their base camp, 200 yards into the jungle, beyond the tree line, and set up claymore mines so their next assault begins with fire and brimstone." While several apprehensive colleagues question the daring tactics in lieu of Boeing B-52 Strata-Fortress airstrikes or flammable F-100 cluster bombs and 50-gallon foo gas dropped by fast movers, it occurs to me there's little use arguing when bosses make up their minds. Hoping they sought divine guidance after using that expression for God's wrath, we each bag 3 Claymore mines and move out once grease paint is applied and all noisy and shiny items are left behind. I've never been on the battle lines, even though I was, as a missile launch officer, considered to be a combat officer. I consider those who serve on the front lines our real heroes of the day, so thank you to all our veterans, but especially to those heroes. God bless you. You know, we live in an amazing country, a country which has endured as a republic through multiple wars and threats. Our vets have helped to preserve this republic. So still today, we continue peacefully choosing leaders, as we have this week, and laying huge expectations on them for the well-being of our republic. The process, which was brilliantly laid out for us in the Constitution, still works today. We may not like the end result, but the result is the voice of the people of this country, and it is heard. And if the government does its job, it is acted upon. While this past election has been rancorous and divisive, it is my prayer that we can now realize that the election is over, and it's time to work together for this country. As a Christian, my example must be as Paul wrote in the book of Romans, chapter 13, verses 1 through 7. Everyone must submit to the governing authorities. For all authority comes from God, and those in positions of authority have been placed there by God. So anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and they will be punished. For the authorities do not strike fear in people who are doing right, but in those who are doing wrong. Would you like to live without fear of the authorities? Do what is right, and they will honor you. The authorities are God's servants, sent for your good. But if you are doing wrong, of course you should be afraid, for they have the power to punish you. They are God's servants, sent for the very purpose of punishing those who do what is wrong. So you must submit to them, not only to avoid punishment, but also to keep a clear conscience. Pay your taxes, too, for these same reasons, for government workers need to be paid. They are serving God in what they do. Give everyone what you owe them. Pay your taxes and government fees to those who collect them, and give respect and honor to those who are in authority. Paul tells us that our governing officials are the servants of God, placed there by God. I think our prayer needs to be that they listen to and heed the voice of the Creator, and that we respectfully honor them and the positions they hold. That's my time for today on the Narration by George podcast. Your comments are always welcome. You can find me on Facebook. Search me out at Narration by George. You can follow me on Twitter, where I'm at Narration by Geo. Or you can send me an email, george@narrationbygeorge.com. Don't forget to check my website out as well, narrationbygeorge.com. I pray you'll join me next week when this podcast will once again be new. In the meantime, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proud